You're listening to the TriStar State. This episode is one of two extended interviews we're rolling out this week with the Democratic and Republican candidates for Tennessee governor. I'm Chaz Sisk. Carl Dean oversaw some big projects during his 8 years as Nashville's mayor: a $600 million convention center, a new minor league ballpark, an amphitheater by the Cumberland River. They left a clear legacy, but they've also been sources of contention. So in an interview shortly before the Democratic primary, WPLN's Emily Siner asked Carl Dean whether he regrets any of the decisions he made as mayor and whether he'd take the same approach to being governor.
I'm talking today to Carl Dean, a former mayor of Nashville.
Dean hadn't yet clinched the Democratic nomination when he visited WPLN studios, but he was already the clear frontrunner.
What I bring to this race in terms of strength is much higher name recognition. I think I bring my executive experience, where I was the mayor of Nashville for 8 years, and my different life experiences, having spent a long time as a public defender working with people in poverty and working on those issues.
The sort of work that might endear him to Democratic voters and those in Tennessee's big cities. But Dean says he's the sort of candidate who can win across party lines.
Also, I have this background where, you know, when I ran for mayor, I ran in a nonpartisan race where I had to appeal to Democrats, Republicans, and independents to win. And so I think I have a natural affinity for working with people. And then when you do the job as mayor, you don't do it on party lines. You do it on what you think is going to move the city forward, what's going to create a better future for Nashville and for its people. And I think that's the approach people are looking for from their governor. They want somebody who's going to put the interest of the state, the interest of the people, before party interests and partisanship. People want to see government do something.
Well, so, I mean, as mayor, you were a proponent of some pretty big-ticket items like the AMP, the convention center, the flood wall. Are you worried at all about being labeled as a tax-and-spend Democrat? And how would you combat that image?
Well, I mean, if you look at what people would normally refer to as sort of the big-ticket items, I guess that would be the convention center, which obviously I'm biased, but I think that has been a huge success for our city. I mean, I think the income that it has created, the success that it has had, the economic energy it's brought to Nashville, far exceeded, what people were expected, and I think it's succeeded beyond people's hopes. So I think that's an asset in my mind. Things like the ballpark, keeping the Predators here in town, building the Send Amphitheater have strengthened our city. I think my economic development work, where over 70,000 jobs came to Nashville, which happened all over the city, not just in the downtown area. It happened in Antioch. It happened in different parts of the city, is a good thing. So I think I've shown that I can manage a city and bring growth and bring additional revenue into the city, which could be used to help pay for education, which we did a lot of, and pay for parks and greenways and sidewalks and police, that it worked. So my argument would be, on the contrary, we created more revenue here. We resulted in more expenditures in the public interest, but the city certainly improved during that time.
Some of the fights did get kind of political, even as a nonpartisan mayor, like the fairgrounds and the AMP. Are you worried at all about those coming back to haunt you in a way?
No. I mean, I think if you're going to be a mayor, if you're going to take on a job as an executive, you don't run away from problems. You can't hide. I mean, you got to do things. And so I think we certainly did things, and we accomplished a lot. And I think the city, when I left the city, was in better shape than when I came in. I also managed the city through a great recession and through a flood. And I think we did very well. So, people are still debating transit. People come up to me all the time and say, wish we had kind of done that. That kind of made a lot of sense, and we had federal money going into it. But you don't win them all. But I think we got a great track record, a great record to run on, in my mind.
So how do you get Republican voters to cross over, especially in a time when it feels like voters are very partisan?
Well, I think you hold on to your principles, you do what you believe, and that's what I'll do. But I think the appeal that we can have is that I get how to create revenue, create more jobs, create opportunity for people. That has an appeal. That has an appeal that goes across party lines. And that will appeal to moderate Republicans, that will appeal to independents, and that will appeal to Democrats. And for different reasons and for some similar reasons. And so I think you just make the case. I mean, I had lots of folks who were Republicans vote for me for mayor. I have lots of Republicans who are supporting me now. So I'm not, that doesn't frighten me. I mean, that can be done.
If you become elected as governor, you would likely have a legislature that's a supermajority Republican. What would it take to be an effective governor?
Well, I think it would take what it takes under almost any scenario is you got to go into anything being willing to work with the other side. You got to be willing to negotiate. You got to be willing to compromise. You got to be willing to know that you're not always going to get everything that you want. But you want to keep the conversation focused on what's best for the people of Tennessee, what's best for the future of the state. And if you succeed at doing that, that's when the magic happens, when you can actually get things done. And this is not a new situation in the history of the state of Tennessee. Phil Bredesen's second term, the Republicans were taking over the legislature. Lamar Alexander and many Republican governors served very capably when they had Democratic dominance of the legislature. You can look around the country at any given time. You have governors of one party, a state legislature of another. I'll give you two examples. Steve Bullock in Montana gets a lot of attention. He's a Democrat. Montana is overwhelmingly Republican legislature. Governor Baker in Massachusetts, Republican, overwhelmingly Democratic legislature. People are forced to talk to each other, to work, to negotiate, and to get things done. And that's where you can actually benefit the state. So that'd be my approach.
So as you look to those governors as models, what are they doing that you'd want to emulate?
Well, I think they're putting the interests of the state first. You know, I, for instance, I've talked a lot about the mistake it was not to do the Medicaid expansion in the state. And you look back on that decision, that was a sort of a very partisan political decision. Other states with Republican governors and Republican legislatures did Medicaid expansion. They analyzed it differently. They didn't analyze it by the politics of it. They analyzed it as what's going to help the citizens of Tennessee, what's going to help maintain our rural hospitals, what's going to make us a competitive state in terms of our health care. And they made a different decision. And so I would now say to the legislature, let's make this decision rationally. Let's look at where we are, and I'm willing to work with you and compromise with you. But we now know what the result of that decision is. We've lost $4 billion. We've had 10 hospitals closed. And let's do something to put Tennessee in a more competitive position. That's how I'd approach it.
Does that mean also that those governors, I mean, occasionally the legislature is passing something that they don't personally agree with, and they just kind of have to bite their tongue and...
Well, every constitution, state constitution is different. And Tennessee's a little bit different because... In Tennessee, to override a governor's veto is a simple majority. So the governor's veto, if something passes the legislature with a high margin, your veto is, you know, and Governor Haslam's faced this repeatedly. There's not much you can do. But I can certainly see scenarios where I would, on principle, veto something that I felt if it was sort of against things that I believe in terms of the way people should be treated or values that I have. I think that's important for the governor to be able to use the bully pulpit to say, this is the type of state we are. These are the things that we believe in, and we don't believe in that.
You've been a big proponent of charter schools.
Yep.
Could we expect, as governor, to see charter schools expand throughout the state?
No. I would think, you know, I'm pretty convinced that I don't see charter schools playing a big role in anywhere other than urban areas. And there, I don't see them as the total answer. I see them as part of the solution. You know, they were created because our school systems were in serious trouble and we needed to have different options. And they served kids who are largely at risk, and they're public schools. I am totally opposed to vouchers. I am totally opposed to for-profit charter schools and always have been and always made those positions very clear. I don't see charter schools as a panacea, but they have been a tool that has been useful in Nashville and Memphis, and it's helped a lot of kids. I mean, the bottom line is you got to look for the results for these kids, and these are kids who are particularly, in most cases, at risk or had not received a really good education.
What to you is it about vouchers that crosses the line into being not helpful?
I think what vouchers do is they take money from the public sector and put it into the private sector. And, you know, charter schools are, of course, under the management of the school boards and have a whole series of regulations and are publicly funded. A voucher is just saying we're using public dollars and we're giving it to a private organization where your control can be less. But it then also undermines, I think, the whole notion of public education, which I don't think charter schools do at all. I mean, there's a vast disconnect in what people understand about charter schools. People always say, you know, a charter school is taking money away from public education. Well, it's a public school. And you know, so you got to repeat that over and over again. But again, it's not a panacea, but it's certainly a tool I wouldn't be afraid to use. And as I say, I think everybody in this campaign has supported them at one time or another.
This may be a little bit in the weeds, but we'll go there. So for, like, if it's a charter school that is overseen by the district, that makes sense. What about, like, the Achievement School District where it's not locally controlled? What are your views on that?
Well, I think you have to, you know, there's a recent study came out in the Achievement School District, mostly people are talking about Memphis in that case, that came out that said essentially the Achievement School District had not seen the gains that were projected or promised and that they had really not performed as well as some of the district-controlled schools, specifically the I-Zone schools in Memphis. Mm-hmm. Now, I've visited the I-Zone schools, and it's very impressive. Those are just, but what they do is, I think they pay more for teachers. They work. They have longer hours. They do a variety of sort of basic, more school-centric control. And they had really strong leadership. Now, the leader of the I-Zone schools has just gone to be the head of the ASD in Memphis. So, you know, we'll see. When I become governor, I will look at that. And again, it's about results. If it's not working, if it's not doing what it was supposed to do, then you got to ask the hard questions and make the hard decisions. But that will occur, you know, after the election. And I'm not afraid to do that. You just got to evaluate things honestly.
If you could sum up your goals as governor in one sentence, what would it be?
To keep Tennessee moving forward.
And why?
I do a compound sentence?
Yeah.
Look, I think Tennessee is positioned to have a great future. There are so many things we got going for us. You know, I think we're a state that is going to be increasingly attractive for businesses to locate here, for people to come here. But to attain those goals, we need to make sure we're taking care of education, where we are investing in education, producing more college graduates, having quality vocational programs for those who choose not to go to college, that we are funding it better, you know, dealing with the disparities that exist in urban areas and rural areas and making sure that all kids have access to quality schools, paying our teachers more. That's key. I did that as mayor of Nashville. I moved starting teacher pay from 30th in the state to 3rd. We increased school budgets by 37%, and we did about $620 million in capital projects for schools. I think schools are key to the future of the state because that will give us the workforce, that will give us the attractiveness so that we can continue to see our economy grow. And when our economy grows, as it did in Nashville, that lets you do more investments in schools. That lets you invest in police. That lets you do greenways and libraries and all the things that make a city or a state an attractive place to live in. And that's how you move forward. You've got to maintain quality of life. You've got to take care of the basics, education, healthcare, economic opportunity. And then the good things that will result from that will be the additional revenue that we can invest in the state for the future.
Carl Dean, thank you for your time.
Thank you.